Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nonprofit U, a forum where nonprofit stakeholders can share lessons learned and discuss the latest developments in the industry. My name is Valerie Leonard, your host. I'm a consultant to nonprofits, and I specialize in community and organizational development. I work with nonprofit organizations to help them make a stronger impact to their clients and community. You can find Nonprofit U on Facebook and Twitter, and I encourage you to comment early and often using the hashtags Nonprofit U, NLEN, or Fundraising That Works. You can also leave comments on blogtalkradio.com/nonprofit_U. The chat room is open, and you can post comments and questions, and we'll be taking questions by phone and from our chat room at about the 15-minute mark. The call-in number is 347-884-8121. Today's guest is Brenda Palms Barber, CEO of the North Fondale Employment Network, or NLEN for short. Brenda has been the CEO of the North Fondale Employment Network since its founding in 1999. She has a Master of Science in Nonprofit Management from the Spertus Institute. Under Brenda's leadership, NLEN has grown from 2 to 21 employees and provides job training and financial literacy to over 2,000 men and women all around Chicago. Brenda has also launched a Sweet Beginnings social enterprise, which produces local honey and skincare products over the Beloved brand. Under the Beloved brand, where 383 returning citizens have been employed since 2007. You can find a full bio for Brenda on my Nonprofit U website, valeriefleonard.com/nonprofitu, on the episodes page, episode 29. Today's episode is Fundraising Strategies That Work. Brenda will share sage advice and proven strategies for effective fundraising that you can begin to implement immediately. After that, we'll go into a case study by Kathleen Fletcher and then apply lessons learned from Brenda. You'll find a link to the case study on the episodes page, and I'm asking that you download and print the case study and follow along at the appropriate time. So thanks for being on the show today, Brenda. It's indeed an honor to have you again. You were my inaugural guest, and we talked about your secret sauce. That was back in June. We got a sense for how you were able to come into a city where you didn't know anybody. Then you started an organization from scratch, and now you've grown it to a budget with nearly $2 million, and you got 21 employees, and you've impacted over 2,000 people. And that's not over the lifetime. That's just over the past year. So congratulations. And
Thank you, Val.
And for our listening audience, if you want to hear about Brenda's secret sauce, go to our very first episode. It's called Brenda's Secret Sauce, and you can hear some of her secrets. She's not going to tell you everything, but you'll get to hear some of her secrets for how she grew the organization. So
Pleasure to be back. Thank you so much for inviting me to participate again, Val. I honestly don't know anyone that ever says no to you because you're just such a honest and committed and a deeply rooted sister in the work. And so anytime you come knocking and make a request, you know that I am there for you because you are there for this community and so many other communities, but no doubt that, you know, North Lawndale is your heart and your home. So this is it's a pleasure to be back on the program with you.
Hey, thank you so much. So we're going to build on the conversation we had a few months ago, and we're going to expand the scope, and we're going to focus on fundraising and ways to provide our listening audience with tools that they can use immediately. So one of the things we want to talk about is having our ducks in a row before fundraising. And we realize that every organization is different, and organizations are all at different levels of their development. So knowing that and understanding that, what would you recommend that organizations do in preparation for fundraising? And what kinds of systems and processes do they need to put in place?
That is a great question, and it's a very big question. And I know that we only have so much time. So I'm going to try to do my best to sort of give you key points, and then, you know, we hopefully if there's more time, we can dive a little bit more deeply. But I think when you think about fundraising, it's really important to understand who cares about what you do. Mm-hmm. And it is, you know, and that means for, you know, corporate foundations to individuals, you know, who cares about the mission? And are you able to talk about your mission succinctly? You know, for the North Lawndale Employment Network, our mission is to improve the earnings potential of the residents of North Lawndale through employment initiatives, innovative employment initiatives that lead to economic advancement. And sometimes in a really simple way, it's just about how do we help people improve their earnings through employment. That's what we're about. And so the question is, who cares about that in terms of your fundraising strategies to start? So that's really one, being clear about vision and mission. And then secondly, it's, you know, before you can really launch, and this is hard because it's sort of like, is it the chicken or the egg? You sort of have to do both simultaneously, and it's challenging, but you have to be able to demonstrate results or impact and why it matters. Why does it matter that the unemployment rate in North Lawndale is so high? Who should care, and why should we care? Well, it's about families and strengthening families and future generations. It's about the restoration of one's self-worth, and everybody wants and needs to work to have sort of their own American dream. And so I think most people can relate to that, but it's really important to know what is the why behind your mission and being able to articulate it, being able to articulate that. And then it's about results. And what's interesting is there was a time, Val, when we could do really effective fundraising by just telling good stories. You know, if you had a good story, you know, you could really lead people down this wonderful sort of journey that you're going on and help them realize that they can make a difference in a person's life. And that is still true. It still holds true that storytelling is powerful. There are so many workshops now just on how to tell a good story as it relates to fundraising. I know that there are lots of organizations, including the former Donors Forum and others that have these kinds of workshops. But in addition to a good story, you have to have measurable results. And so this is where I think a lot of organizations, you know, we struggle with how do we measure what we're doing, what kind of tools or software products do we purchase. The North Lawndale Employment Network is we use ETO, which is Efforts to Outcome, and that is a software tool that we use to track every individual and every income. Hold on one second. Pardon me. We are in a training center, and so there are people being trained, and they're being loud. So I just had to, I had to politely ask them to be quiet. Sorry about that. So it's, you know, measuring how long does a person stay on a job, measuring how long does it take between the time they're trained to the time they actually get employment, what kind of advancements do they make in their job or within that particular sector. So when a funder asks me, well, so tell me, you know, about your organization, not only do I start with the mission, but I quickly follow up with the impact of our results. The past year, we assisted and placed 625 people in jobs. The average salary was $11.22. The graduation rate or placement rate is 85% out of our programs. So it's having quantifiable data, you know, that also helps to support your cause or your mission.
Yeah, and just listening to those numbers, I want to remind folks that Brenda is outperforming benchmarks that have been set by the Department of Labor. So kudos to you. Kudos.
Thanks, Valerie. Thanks. It's a lot of work. And part of that is changing our culture because, you know, I think we talked about this a little bit before, Valerie, but so many times it's what moves us is our mission to do the work. I mean, most of us who do the work really care about people. And to have to care about numbers is just not mm-hmm. as intuitive for us.
Right.
And so it's really important that we hire people, or that we begin to create a culture that helps people understand that not only is it important to have a respectful and thoughtful and caring relationship with the people whom we serve, but that we ourselves have to be better and disciplined about collecting data in a way that is also respectful, so that we can keep doing the work that we're so passionate about.
Right. And then in summary, it sounds to me like you listened to President Reagan very well when he was president. He said, trust but verify.
Oh, gosh. You know, that's probably the only time you would hear me agree with a Republican. Trust but verify. I'll go that way. I'll accept that.
Yes. That's what our funders are telling us. We love you. We love the work. Yeah, we hear you. We believe you, but verify that, won't you? What are your outcomes?
That's so true. And the thing is, Val, it actually is stuff. These are numbers that you almost have to just have memorized. You have to be able to talk about them off the top of your head. You can't seem to hesitate, because it'll tell people are watching your response. And it's like, okay, this is an organization that's collecting data, or they seem to still be struggling with that. Do they have the capacity? And then once they start asking questions, you start going down that path where you have to prove the efficacy of your work. And and that's fine. We're okay with, we're okay with that. But it's
okay,
it can sometimes
when we say efficacy, I'm sorry, Brenda. Mm-hmm. But when we say efficacy, what do we mean?
The proof is there proof of concept? You know, do you have demonstrated ability to really execute in the way that you say?
Mm-hmm.
Is what you're doing valuable? And the way that you measure value is if you can make it somewhat quantifiable. And that's, of course, in addition to your story, right?
Yes. So you walk a tightrope. You got to appeal to the emotions, the human interest.
Yes.
But at the same time, you have to be able to rely on big data and make those big data relevant to this individual client. Right, in community. That's hard.
It is hard. But sometimes, you know, the other thing that we've done, and I don't know where this fits in the question anymore, but
that's okay.
You know, sometimes we've had free events where, you know, sometimes you just go, oh gosh, you know, can we afford to do this? But sometimes it's important, if your business or your nonprofit is the kind that you can host some sort of an event, whether it's just inviting people to come over for hot dogs and interact with your clients, interact with your staff, you know, you can build some relationships out of that experience that you can eventually cultivate over time that can lead to individual donations as well as sometimes, you know, there might be foundations, folks that show up. But the key to another key to fundraising is realizing that you have to use a variety of different approaches. And so once you have your measurable data and a system in place by which to collect data and then generate reports that are really easy to understand, and then, you know, you have your story, it's important then to use social media, your website, to project the story, to get the story out, to help raise the profile of what you do, so that people, so that you're not a mystery. You know, it's getting those stories and getting your impacts out. We've created a postcard-sized document that's really a highlight of about 10 key data points that we've converted into what we call an infographic. So it's just really kind of a snapshot picture of something that, coupled with a data point that tells a story. And that's something that we pass out to folks when they come visit us. We have it posted in our resource center because we want people to know that we're having an impact. And that helps to raise funds with folks whom you may never even realize are interested in making a donation to you. But really having transparency around your impacts, as well as these free events that I was talking about, to collect individual data and send that information to them, or have a newsletter that you send out to stay in contact with folks and try to stay as top of mind as possible when it comes time to giving.
Okay, awesome, awesome. I just want to remind our listening audience that we are talking with Brenda Palms Barber. She's the CEO of the North Lawndale Employment Network, better known as NLEN. If you have any questions, please feel free to call in. Our number is 347-884-8121. So, Brenda, you have a really good segue to the next question about stakeholder engagement. So clearly that's very important, and your funders, you know, are really, really, they're just part of the stakeholder mix, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
They're very important, and organizations need to be sure that all hands are on deck in order to maximize their fundraising success. So who else are some of the typical stakeholders that need to be involved in the fundraising process? And how do we engage them so there's not just this one person doing all the heavy lifting?
Well, fundraising
and
is everyone's
course, I don't
job.
Know anything about that.
We know you do. And it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good to
no,
be the
doesn't.
Only one, you know, who carries sort of the burden of raising all the funds. And I have certainly been in that place before. As well, it's sort of like, you know, the chicken that has to go out, whoever this is, and picks the apples off the apple tree and bakes the apple, peels the apple, you know, and finally bakes the pie, and then everybody wants a piece at the end. So, but I think that it absolutely has to be everyone's responsibility, everyone from your frontline staff to your board president. And so we also, you know, again, it's about making sure that your own staff are aware of the importance of raising funds to do the work that we do in the nonprofit sector. And we have started to post internally our performance so that everyone in the organization is aware if we're on track, if we're a little off track, if we're a lot off track, because we know that our performance matters. And if our performance is off track, then that means that we could, you know, not be competitive for funds in the future. So that's sort of how our frontline staff are aware. We post our results, and we also share whenever there's a grant that's been secured. We, you know, let everyone know that, hey, good job. This is what we've done together, because we can't, no one individual can raise the money. I can't go out and meet with a foundation without having good performance results and impact, and that's something the staff have to be committed to, in addition to their discipline around, you know, tracking that data. So it's all of us. We're all in, because if we all do our best, then we all win, and if we are not doing our best, then we become vulnerable and less competitive.
Yes, yes, yes. So fundraising, you know, listening to you is a whole lot like building a brand, and building a brand goes a whole lot further than just this logo, right? It's your entire experience. So from the time I, you know, look in the paper and see a story to the time I walk into NLEN, you know, if I'm a client, you know, the intake all the way through placement, you know, that's my experience, right? If I'm a funder, you know, whatever I see on your website, you know, have that meeting and then I just pop in, you know, and dropped in on you.
That's right.
You know, that's my experience. So all of that, you know, whether we call it fundraising or not, you know, it's the total experience. And if at any point of contact I'm getting some weird vibe, I might decide not to use your service. And if I don't use your service, I can't, you know, you can't very well make the case that you're effective, right? And fundraisers are
that's
not going to buy what you're selling.
No, that's a really good point. And what you raised and what you reminded me is, you know, I said that it's, you know, everyone's responsibilities around fundraising. But at the end of the day, if the clients we serve aren't happy and are not being satisfied, you know, then we don't have the story to tell. We won't have the data. And so really it's about making sure that we're executing our programs and services and delivering them in a way that is helping to assist those folks who are coming to us. So social media is clearly one of the ways that we're finding to measure the impact of our services with our clients. And it's great when we get emails or when we receive, you know, Facebook comments about how the work has helped to advance their lives. It's another good feedback loop. But here's the thing. Funders are looking at your websites too, and funders are involved in social media. And so they're looking to get authentic information about an organization before they make those investments. And so that's just another, it's something to keep in mind that, you know, the best people to tell your story are the people that have come through your programs and services.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, so I want to remind, I just want to remind folks that we're speaking with Brenda Palms Barber. She is the CEO of NLEN, the North Lawndale Employment Network. If you have any questions, feel free to call us and chime in. That number is 347-884-8121. Again, 347-884-8121. Okay, Brenda, I'm sorry.
No, it just made me think of, I'm looking at my notes, and I realize there's a couple of other things that are really important that sometimes I think we forget about when we're you know, looking to seek to raise funds. And one of them is just making sure that your 501c3 nonprofit agency is has a certificate of good standing with the Illinois, with the state of Illinois. Some funders will absolutely seek out and will request copies of your certificate of good standing, and that just means that you have filed all of your taxes or your 990s, that you've, you know, that you have maintained your paperwork as a trusted nonprofit organization doing work in the state of Illinois. So, real briefly, it was several years ago, but I was really excited about a potential funding opportunity. And I submitted all this information. They were like, oh, just send me a one-page summary about your organization, because it was really sort of just a perfunctory kind of thing. They just want a formality. Until they went to the Illinois website and the state of Illinois nonprofits and saw that we had not filed or had not submitted, we've missed some kind of document, and that we were no longer in good standing. And so as a result, we lost like a $30,000 grant because we just didn't know that we hadn't submitted the proper paperwork. And so it really does matter. I can assure you that since then we've never missed and we've maintained our certificate in good standing. But it's sometimes that back office paperwork that really matters.
Yes, 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 and I will. I will tell you, I have worked with a number of organizations. I don't care what the issue is; it always seems to boil down to compliance. One organization I was working with, they were relatively new. They had a sophisticated board. They had an accountant. They had a lawyer, but the accountant and lawyer were not well versed in what nonprofits need. So they had 3 years not knowing about all of these different filings with the IRS, and they were in jeopardy of losing their tax-exempt status, and they were being fined about $12,000, which could have wiped them out. You know, thank God we had had an accountant who understood, you know, how to navigate that kind of issue. But, you know, most folks are not nearly that lucky, and I have to tell you, you know, being African-American and working with some of our agencies, you know, that's not our strong suit, you know, that paperwork, you know, so you will see. And, you know, I have issues myself, you know, doing my paperwork. So I know from whence I speak, you know, that's why I'm so passionate about it. Every time I get, you know, get a chance, I have to remind people, make sure that you're up to speed on all of your filings at the state level, federal level, if you have to do anything at the county level, because that can make
or break you
and your opportunities.
It is. I could not say it better, because it is the thing that, you know, can shut down no matter how good your storytelling is, no matter how great your results are in the impact. If your paperwork, if your legal documentation, the foundation for which you stand on as an agency to receive funding, is not in place, it shuts you down. You cannot do the work. So it's not to be taken lightly. Yeah, I totally agree. And wow, that is, they were lucky. They were very fortunate.
Yeah, this lady, she's a nonprofit accountant. You know, she has a specialty in nonprofit, right? And she has relationships with the IRS, so she was able to negotiate with them and do a letter of abatement, you know, so they had to describe, you know, what happened, you know, what went wrong, why it went wrong, and give assurances that it would never happen, you know, again. And, you know, they were able to get out of that situation. But, you know, everybody's not that important, you know.
Or that connected, that's right. So that's the thing that probably the first and foremost in fundraising is to make sure that your back office, like you said, systems are sometimes, you know, those of us who are much more passionate about changing the world, you know, are less so about changing our back office systems. And I realize that that's something that we really have had to spend time with over the last several years, or we wouldn't be, you know, 16 years strong. The other thing,
that
I'm not sure how.
The board and management, board systems and management.
Absolutely. Yes. And there are consultants. There are wonderful people that can provide, you know, help you with that kind of capacity building support. I mean, you're one of them. I mean, we have a treasure in you. You are one of, you know, very knowledgeable about the nonprofit ladder that one must climb in order to really grow and to build capacity. So I just have to, you know, say, if there are folks listening who are at that beginning stage, and even beyond that, quite frankly, you just need to have a really good consulting moment with Val. She can lay it out for you in a way that's not overwhelming or intimidating, but help get you on your way. So, because she's done that for us.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Okay, I just got one
more
question.
It's the truth. It's the truth.
Thank you. I got one more question before we go into our case study. And this concerns diversifying funding sources. You know, typically when people do the work that you do and serve the clients that you serve, you know, which for the most part are people who were, you know, re-entering, you know, from prison, right? That's
And
underemployed. So some of the most difficult to place folks, you have been very successful. But you also learned very early on that you can't continue to depend solely on the seed funding. You can't depend solely upon government funding, especially not in the state of Illinois. Yeah, we've been 7 months without a budget. It's still counting. I don't think it's worth having a budget for this year, quite honestly. I need to focus on next year. But that's neither here nor there. That's only my opinion. It's not Brenda's opinion. I want people to be very clear that I speak for myself, and nothing, and Brenda shall be held harmless for anything I say on this show other than all the wonderful stuff that I say about her organization. So moving right along, you have diversified, right?
And, we absolutely.
And a lot of your work has to do with building social enterprise so you can create jobs for your clientele and also help them create their own businesses. You want to tell us a little bit about that work?
Well, sure. I guess that you know, I will say that you're right. We have city and state funding, and we also have private foundation and corporate funding. And we also have individual
donors that are supporting our work, which is an area that we're really working to cultivate more so. And then we have one signature annual fundraising event, which is called our Sweet Beginnings Tea. We actually are hosting our 11th Sweet Beginnings Tea February 19th at the Fairmont Hotel from 3 to 5. And I do have to just say I'm excited about recognizing our own Cook County Commissioner Robert Steele with our Creating a Community That Works Award. Robert is just an amazing servant leader and deeply rooted in North Lawndale, and he's helped us to create more avenues to expand our apiaries in partnership with the Cook County Forest Preserve, and he's also one of our founding members of the North Lawndale Employment Network. So we're excited about recognizing him, and we're hoping that folks come out and really help us lift him up February 19th. But the tea is a way for us to raise the profile of the organization as well, right? And you mentioned our social enterprise, Sweet Beginnings. And so we, this year, this past June, we started distribution in Mariano's. And it's just been a phenomenal ride. And Bob Mariano is also going to be attending our tea and receiving our Voice of the Voiceless Award. And it's because not only is he helping to transform the lives of the men and women that we serve through our social enterprise Sweet Beginnings and you know the production of our skincare products and our local honey. But Mariano's also hires people who have had a brush with the law, right? And he personally believes in second chances. And I'm excited for folks coming to the tea to sort of hear his story. He wasn't engaged, you know, in the criminal justice system, but he certainly understands second chances and disappointments. And so we're excited that our mission and our vision is just so beautifully in alignment with Bob Mariano. Now, I'm sharing this because we've had to figure out how do you create a signature fundraising event that people will care about and spend money with, with a population or mission focus that a lot of folks just don't feel warm and cuddly about, right?
Right.
The criminal justice system is something that people have very mixed views about, whereas if we were trying to get people to buy, you know, or adopt unwanted puppies and kittens, you know, whoa, there's a huge amount of support there. But it takes someone like a businessman and an entrepreneur and someone that the city of Chicago cares about, like a Bob Mariano or a Robert Steele, that raise the awareness of the type of work that we're doing, that endorses the work that we're doing, and who are in alignment with advancing our mission. So that signature event has grown over the years from the first year. I think we may have had 100 people at the event to last year. We celebrated our 15th anniversary, and we had well over 400 people attend. And our tea has become it's become the, you know, the way for us to communicate to the public that about the impact and the results and the relationships that we value at the North Lawndale Employment Network. So roughly we're generating anywhere from, you know, this is gross, anywhere from over $300,000 for unrestricted general operating funds that we need. The unfortunate part about fundraising is that a lot of funders aren't interested in covering the cost of your indirect cost, right? Your overhead cost. And it's the stuff that you need in order to actually deliver programs and services. You have to have telephones. You have to have a printer. You have to have, you know, make copies for classes. You have to have all those, you know, accountants and lawyers that we talked about, right? And all those services that you know, that people, you know, that oftentimes people only want to support program rather than really what does it fully cost to run the organization. So it puts organizations, you know, especially smaller ones like ours and others that may be listening, you know, in a position of having to step outside of just doing your traditional work of getting grants and contracts, et cetera, and having an additional fundraiser to fill in the and provide general operating money where no one's interested in really covering those kinds of expenses. Mm-hmm. So coming up with a signature fundraising event is a really important diversifying your funding portfolio and making it unique. And so in our case, because Sweet Beginnings, our social enterprise, produces local urban honey and skincare products, it just sort of was a unique opportunity for us to think about, well, how best to feature our product, you know, our honey than a tea, you know. And so the Fairmont uses our honey in all of the tea sandwiches and scones, and we have tea that is featured. And this year, one of our partners, our employment partners, is Damron, and they're a large minority-owned, African-American-owned business on the west side that also produces a beautiful tea. And one of their largest business partners is McDonald's. And so they are bringing, they're actually planning to feature their tea, and they're making this donation to us, coupled with our honey, as part of the centerpieces this year for the Sweet Beginnings tea. So then that is a relationship that also expands into job placement, right? And has expanded into job placement. So, again, it's always – and then there are individuals that are involved in the company that are making individual donations to the organization as well. Social enterprises are amazing, to say the least. I think that most nonprofits are – if they haven't already, they're exploring ways to generate revenue through – the operations of a social enterprise. And I think that we've gotten a lot smarter about how to launch them and how to produce these businesses that are another means by which to diversify your funding. But I also think you have to be really careful and thoughtful. And these days, it's probably best to actually work with a consultant to help you conduct some in-depth discussions with the staff, the leadership team, and the board to say, what is it that we want to do, and what is the role that we want the social enterprise to play? Is it to meet the needs or the experience and educational needs of the population that we're working with, or is it really a revenue generator? And because that will you'll create two different sort of pathways to get there. And so I wish folks the very best. It is not work for the faint of heart. We've been at that for 11 years or so with Sweet Beginnings now, 10 years. And we love our social enterprise, and we're excited by it, but it certainly has – it's a commitment. Last year I was really pleased to share that we reached a important milestone, which is that we actually had a very profitable year last year based solely on sales, not based on revenue from grants or other supports that we receive, and it was pretty awesome.
Oh, congratulations.
Yay.
And on that
Thank
note,
you.
I'm going to have to make a segue. First of all, I want to remind our callers that they're listening to Nonprofit U. We have Brenda Palms Barber. She is the CEO of NLEN. If you have any questions, please feel free to call in 347-884-8121. Again, that number is 347-884-8121. You can also share some of your experiences. While we're waiting for you to call in, Brenda and I are going to go over a case study. This is a critical thinking exercise written by a consultant. Her name, just bear with me, is Kathleen. Do you have her last name? Kathleen's last name, unfortunately. Kathleen Fletcher. She's a consultant out of California. She had a wonderful exercise that we thought would be appropriate today, talking about fundraising and ethical dilemmas and all that good stuff. It's called What is the Color of Their Money? And Brenda will start, and then I'll chime in. So without further ado, Brenda, do you want to get started? Oh, and I just want to remind people, if you just have tuned in, you can download this case study. Go to the episodes page on blogtalkradio.com, and you click onto the link, and you can download it and print it out and follow along. If not, you know, you can do it after the show. All righty. So, Brenda, I'm going to turn it over to you.
All right. Here we go. All right. So, and we're going to discuss this afterwards. There are lots of different scenarios here. So, lately, Janet Miller was having a hard time getting herself motivated to go to work in the morning. For 10 years, she had relished every minute of her job as executive director of Save Our Shore, an environmental organization. But now, nothing seemed to be going right. A valued employee was moving to Texas. The office landlord wanted to raise the rent, and the annual fund drive was $30,000 short of its goal with only 2 days left in the fiscal year. The latter problem was really troubling to Janet. As executive director, she was held ultimately responsible by the board of directors for bringing in the money, even though the part-time director of development did most of the day-to-day fundraising work. The organization's purpose, saving the local coastline from unrestricted growth and pollution, was noble, but the budget was less than $200,000. The $30,000 could mean the difference between being able to continue the work or having to cut back severely. It was the typical grassroots dilemma at its worst. Of course, the board really ought to be doing more of the fundraising themselves, but...
But Janet and the development director were having a very difficult time getting that to happen. The board members had not been recruited to do fundraising, and most weren't even willing to start now. They complained that they didn't know anyone with money, and that asking for money was like begging, and they just wouldn't do that. Some of them didn't even give more than $25 a year to the organizations themselves. A top-notch consultant had been brought in to do board training and fundraising, but even that hadn't helped much. Only a few members were willing to take the risk of asking their contacts to donate money to this worthy cause. Staring glumly at the papers on her desk, Janet was startled by the sudden ring of the phone. She waited for her part-time secretary to answer, then she realized that she had already gone home for the day. So she picked up the phone and tried to be enthusiastic as she answered with the organization's name.
Janet, exclaimed the board member on the other end of the phone. I have great news. The Grove Corporation is going to give us a donation of $25,000. My contact just phoned. I did it for you this time. I did it. Janet was stunned. It was true that this board member, Harold Jackson, was one of the few who was willing to stick their necks out and fundraise. But the Grove Corporation had not been on anyone's list of possible prospects. They hardly had a presence in the local community. And why would they be interested in an organization like Save Our Shore? That's wonderful, Harold. In fact, that's stupendous, Janet exclaimed after a moment's hesitation. How did you do it?
Well, actually, the guy in charge of their contributions program at corporate headquarters owes me a favor. You see, he's from Chicago. He owes me a favor from years back. Couldn't resist. I didn't know he was working at Grove now. I just saw his name on their annual report, and I called him up. He was happy to get an old debt paid back. He said the check was already in the mail. We heard that one before, right? The only thing they want us to do is give them lots of public recognition. We're awfully close to our goal now. After a few more words of appropriate thanks and congratulations, Janet said goodbye and hung up the phone. A feeling of elation came over her. We're going to make it after all. And the board did it. Suddenly, a troubling thought occurred to her. Wasn't Grove Company the company that was under investigation for violating environmental protection laws last year? Wasn't there something in the paper about a payoff scandal in Chicago? She wasn't big. It wasn't big front page news, but it did seem like she had heard or read something about the company, and then she'd forgotten about it. But then, you know, since Groves wasn't involved in the local Save Our Shore issues, you know, it just didn't click, right?
So she picked up the phone and called her friend and colleague Roger Tucker. Roger's a lawyer who sometimes did work for the legal defense fund of a large environmental protection organization. Sure enough, Groves had been involved in both violation of environmental protection laws and in a payoff scandal with a government official in the watchdog agency. A top officer in the company had been indicted, and the company paid a large fine. Furthermore, fish were dying downriver from one of Groves' plants, and a legal defense team was trying to prove it was the plant's fault. Roger firmly believed that it was, and that Groves was thumbing its nose at the environmentalists by using clever legal tactics to keep the case out of court. Groves Corporation was definitely no friend of the environment. Now, Janet really felt herself in a dilemma. Could a group like Save Our Shore, which was dedicated to protecting the environment, accept money from a corporation that willfully broke the environmental protection laws? On a philosophical level, the answer would be a simple no. But this was complicated by several other factors. Janet and the development director had been working for months to get the board to more actively become involved in fundraising. This $25,000 donation was the largest ever secured by a board member, and Harold was proud of his accomplishment. Being one of the few members with either of the contacts or the desire to do fundraising, his continued willingness to ask for support was crucial to the board's future development efforts. So what if Save Our Shore refused to accept the donation he had secured? His friend had owed him a favor, and Harold had used that paycheck, that payback, for Save Our Shore. Janet thought, how could we possibly refuse it?
On the other hand, the company specified that they wanted lots of public recognition for their donation. Were they trying to assuage their guilt and improve their public image? Were they trying to bribe environmental groups like Save Our Shore by giving them desperately needed funds in return for staying out of their hair? Or was there something else going on, like trying to influence the ongoing investigation into their waste disposal practices? How would other donors and board members feel about receiving such a substantial amount from a corporation that is seemingly committed crimes against the environment? Would it appear that Save Our Shore had sold out in order to survive? Would Roger and Janet's colleagues and other environmental protection groups think she had sold out? However, the other factor to be considered was indeed survival. The $25,000 would help pay the rent, help continue the work being done by the dedicated staff and volunteers. Was it wrong, she wondered, to accept a gift, however tainted, when survival was in question? Was it wrong to compromise principles when the accomplishment of the organization's overall goals was at stake? These were the thoughts that ran in Janet's head, from depression to agonizing dilemma in one day. Wow. Wow, where's the match? What should she do next? What should the organization do about this donation? I like that.
Oh, gosh. It's so true, though, on some level. I mean, it's just like rings with, like, truth around fundraising. Sometimes we, you know, it's like we can justify anything for survival because we believe in our mission so much, and we just don't want to, you know, let money go if we cannot all figure out how to keep it, because it's so hard to come up with. And then you have this board member, you know, who really did step out and try to raise some money and was successful at it.
So that brings me to a question. What is the proper role of the board in all of this, you know?
You know, what I think is missing is that even though there was some, quote, training by a consultant, I'm not sure what that training entailed, but I believe that you have to have a clear set of ethical core beliefs and identify, you know, what kinds of funding you will accept and what types you won't based on your ethical set of beliefs, you know. So for my organization, Val, we won't accept money from companies that sell alcohol. We just don't think that it's something that we want to be associated with as an organization. And so our board members know that, and we have it documented in our part of our it's called a development fund strategy. And so therefore it's clear we will not accept or pursue those kinds of funds. So I think that part of what's missing is that the board has to be clear about what types of funding they will accept. And again, here she is, the executive director, you know, all by herself trying to figure out what's right when there should in fact be a good governance committee of the board that should be reviewing the proposal, you know, this opportunity with the board member, because it's not her job necessarily to go back to this other board member. It should be the board president and the board governance committee or executive committee wrestling with this issue and then communicating with the other board member as a peer, and not her job.
Okay, it sounds to me like they don't have a policy in place, like you said, for accepting gifts, or if they do have a policy, it may not have addressed, you know, the ethics of receiving gifts. So I think one of the things that they should have in place in their board fundraising policy, like you said, make sure that there is clear language that outlines what types of gifts they will and will not receive, and bring it back to their mission, vision, and core
and
values.
Ethics. Yes. Yes. And their core values. Absolutely. I think the other thing that was kind of that my first thought was, how can I keep the money, right? How can we keep the money?
Right, right.
And I'm like, well, maybe we could just take the money
and run,
and sort of run and basically just say this was make it anonymous. You know, that nobody would have to, but you still have to live with knowing that you've taken money, especially since they're an environmental organization.
But
they want big, big public, you know, that's the one stipulation that they've placed is we want recognition. So that sort of, you know, that sort of shuts down my other way that I thought I might be able to keep the money is just through, you know, just taking the money and keeping it quiet.
Right, right. Or
let anybody know.
Could it be an anonymous gift, and then they work together on some other project without acknowledging that a gift ever changed hands? But, you know, clearly, you know, they're trying to buy some sort of goodwill with the community. I don't know.
Yeah.
When you're running an organization, you're not just raising money for yourself. You know, when I ran an organization, there were decisions that I would not make because I was responsible for other people eating, right? You know, there are certain things and people know what I feel about a lot of things. And I'm a single person, don't have family, don't have any children. You know, so I have a certain amount of freedom to say what I want to say, about whom I want to say, when and where. But when I was running an organization, I didn't have that freedom. I would rein in my tongue because I knew other people had to eat based on the decisions that I made.
That you want to make. Yeah, right.
Right.
And that's why, it's really important. That's why you have a board of directors to help carry the, share the responsibility and provide guidance and governance over these kinds of decisions? This poor woman, you know. The other thing I'm wondering about is, you know, they're falling short of their goals, so they're going to have to definitely rethink their budget and scale down. There might be other ways that they could engage with this company. Maybe they can have a conversation with them to say, you know, we are not in agreement with your funds, but we would like to work with you to clean the river, to clean the fish, to do something that is in alignment with us, and we would like not just $25,000, we would like $50,000 to do that, right? So,
right.
It could be a window of opportunity to still get funds and do a writer thing that's based on your values and challenge them to do something that's more positive and constructive for the community and for the organization, and not just use them, you know, to appear as if they care about the community when in fact they're destroying it, the company.
Right. So not allowing the organization to become literally a tool to launder dirty money. You know, you stand in front of us, right?
Wow.
As a poster child for what we could be while we go and, you know, literally do our dirt, you know, in the community backyard.
Right. That's right. So I think that's huge, but it really does reflect back on having a strong organizational structure and clear identification and delineation of responsibilities between the executive director and the board.
Yes. And then, you know, I don't know, at a gut level, you know, trying to figure out, for me, I would try to figure out some face-saving way to accept the money, right? You know, like,
well,
like
that's right.
Because, you know, we are in dire straits and everybody on my watch has to eat. But at the same time, you know, I would be putting in systems, you know, I would not sell out. Let's be clear. There are certain core values you don't sell out on. But again, you know, like you said, use this as an opportunity to help this organization, help the corporation redeem themselves.
Is there a way you can find a win without losing your integrity? Because the minute you begin to, and this is, you know, we've talked about this too, is mission creep. You know, and what we're talking about is, let's get real, right? It is survival. And when you're in a survival mode, it's like almost anything is, you know, you're willing almost to do anything. And then you have to ask yourself the hard question, which is, you know, why aren't we able to sort of generate the money that we need? And do we need to reexamine and revisit our mission? You know, is the work that we're doing viable enough to garner the kind of public support that's needed to keep our doors open? And are there other organizations in the neighborhood or in the city that they could merge with? And I think merging is always difficult because we all know that we do the work that we do, the way that we do it, for a reason. But if it's really about the greater good and not about our egos, it could often mean merging with another organization and continuing to do the work, but if they, you know what I mean? And that way you could save more jobs by thinking about a collaboration, because if they're $30,000 short and they have a $200,000 budget, you know, and they don't seem to have a, we don't know if they have a line of credit, we don't know if they have an endowment, but it sounds like if they're already in survival mode, that things are pretty dire. And so it's important for the board, again, to think about that. Or is this just a moment? Mm-hmm. Or is this something that is, you know, we're trying to put a Band-Aid on something that really needs surgery?
Right. And then long-term, let's think about that board. You know, clearly some of those board members don't need to be board members if they have gone through some sort of training and they're still not feeling ownership where they want to lend their resources, you know, their networks, their money, you know, there should be an expectation of board members. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hard to change midstream. You know, if you bring people in and expectation of fundraising, and then all of a sudden you put in all of these rules about what's expected in terms of fundraising, you know, give or get, that's hard. But, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. I would take a long-term view, you know, assuming that they can still survive. It's going to be rough, but consider making some of those members who don't have the wherewithal in terms of the will or the funding to contribute financially or lend their network,
mm-hmm.
maybe they can
mm-hmm.
be advisory, you know, be on an advisory
exactly,
board.
I was thinking that, yep.
And,
or
and
volunteer.
Bring on,
or and you
and
said, go ahead,
to,
you were going to say, and bring on other
yeah,
people that,
yeah.
Yeah, and it's a painful thing. We've gone through that where, you know, mm-hmm. our board members, when we first started off, were only required to give $100 every year. And then the $100 moved to $300. And eventually, you know, the $300 moved to a give and get of $3,500. And so mm-hmm. there were a number of people that chose to step off the board because they couldn't fulfill that financial obligation. And we still maintain relationship with them, but that was fair. You know, we have to be clear about what mm-hmm. the expectation is. And then people can say, I'm signing up for it. So now when I have board orientations, we're really clear about what the give and the get is, you know, how many board meetings there are, how we expect you to, you know, engage and participate. Everyone has to serve on a committee. So, again, it's about being transparent about expectations. And now we have a board where there's 100% participation in the give and the get. Either they're able to raise the money from their own contacts or they write a check.
Mm-hmm.
But we have 100% participation. And it took 15 years to get there.
Well, that's awesome. And,
you know,
and that's a great
it takes
that's
time.
A great way to end this conversation. Oh, that is beautiful. On a positive note, and we have gone from case study to real life. So it is doable. We're not just talking, you know, what if. You know, we try to create a situation where we're immediately applying lessons learned from this case study, and we invite you to share this with your own boards and other people in your network. And
yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what you, our listeners, come up with in, you know, your own environments. So I want to thank Brenda. Brenda is the CEO of NLEN, North Fondale Employment Network. Thank you so much. We're a little bit over time, but I think that this discussion was well worth it. I have learned a whole lot just listening to you, and I always learn something. I mean, we could be walking down the street, and I talk to you, and I learn something. I learned something in this conversation, too. So thank you.
It's mutual, Val. It's mutual. You're full of wisdom and wonderment, too.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to share with the audience before you go?
No, I just would love to invite people to visit our website at www.nlen.org and check out our programs and services. And feel free to please pass on and share the link. And also take a look at our Sweet Beginnings Tea invitation and know that we are hoping that we'll have lots and lots of folks from the North Lawndale community come out and support the event. And all the details are on our website.
Okay, awesome, awesome. So I'd like to thank you again for listening to Nonprofit You Blog Radio Talk Show. This show should be available for download within about an hour. And we encourage you to share the recording in your networks. And be sure to tune in next week when our guest will be Angela Hall from the Law Project. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brenda.
You're welcome, Val. You're the best.